Hello, and welcome to A History of Japan.
Season 11, Episode 15, The Cult of Tokugawa Ieyasu, a bonus episode. Oda Nobunaga pounded the rice, Toyotomi Hideyoshi kneaded the dough, but it was Tokugawa Ieyasu who ate the rice cake. In the midst of the tapestry of upheaval that composed the backdrop of Sengoku Jidai, Oda Nobunaga emerged to begin the process which resulted in the political reunification of Japan. While winning battles and consolidating power through alliances certainly both played potent roles in this endeavor, other daimyo had certainly won battles and even managed to consolidate alliances, albeit much shorter-lived. So how did Nobunaga manage to succeed where others had failed, especially during an era in which the phenomenon of Gekkokujō became relatively commonplace? To guide today's somewhat cerebral discussion about Japanese political unification, I will be relying heavily on the book Tokugawa Ideology by Herman Ooms, whom I just recently learned passed away this last December. Many of his books have guided our discussions throughout this podcast's tenure, and I'm sure his scholarship will continue to inform our understanding of Japanese history moving forward. To more fully understand the origins of the state-sponsored cult that revolved around worshipping the deified Tokugawa Ieyasu, we should discuss some of the political tactics which Oda Nobunaga utilized to gain rough recognition of an ostensibly national government, as well as the similar activities of Toyotomi Hideyoshi after him. To better understand these tactics, we need to look further back to the latter half of the 1400s. In the midst of the chaotic days of Sengoku Jidai, a spiritual revolution was brewing within the kami-worshipping religion of Shinto. We previously discussed the syncretization of Shinto and Buddhism, particularly Kukai's theological formulation that the indigenous kami of Japan were actually Buddhas and Bodhisattvas in clever disguise. This formulation is known as Honji Suijaku in Japanese. There is a tendency to understand syncretization as a one-way street, that once deities, rituals, and beliefs have been merged, that the practitioners move on and go with the flow. However, Kukai's assertions had never been fully accepted by the more conservative branches of Shinto ritualists, who persisted in viewing Buddhism as unwelcome spiritual competition. Around the late Kamakura period, which, as a reminder, would be the early 1300s, Shinto priests began asserting a competing theory in direct opposition to Honji Suijaku, which became known as Inverted Honji Suijaku. As the rather on-the-nose name suggests, the theory posits that Buddhist deities are actually Japanese kami in clever disguise. While this religious discourse may seem obtuse, the essential debate revolved around the question, who came first, the kami or the bodhisattva? The formulation of the inverted Honji Suijaku, which claims that the kami came first, found a vociferously tireless champion in the person of Yoshida Kanetomo. A Kuge born into the Urabe clan, Kanetomo's father worked as a higher bureaucrat in the Department of Shinto. Following in his footsteps, Kanetomo became a Shinto priest and served at the Yoshida Shrine in Kyoto. A religious scholar at heart, he wrote several treatises on Shinto which were inspired by his own studies of the Nihon Shoki, particularly the early section which is called the Age of the Gods. His writings were very compelling in their time, and he enjoyed frequent invitations to attend the emperor and deliver lectures based on his scholarship and beliefs. Yoshida Kanetomo's style of Shinto was originally named Yuiitsu Shinto, meaning the one true Shinto. He worked tirelessly in his scholarship to recover the pre-Buddhist beliefs and practices of indigenous worship and to create a system of Shinto that existed apart from Buddhism. The primary values that took hold among his followers were the concepts of shōjō, or purity, and makoto, which is sincerity. In some ways, obtaining purity was seen as a pathway to cultivating sincerity, and Kanetomo and his devotees created new purification rituals, as well as revived some which had fallen into disuse. Yoshida Kanetomo was highly celebrated in his time by the imperial court and among the elites of Kansai. The Yoshida Shrine of Kyoto, with which he was affiliated, was granted the right to rank non-imperial shrines throughout the nation, which would eventually become a source of power and authority among indigenous cults throughout Japan. Yuiitsu Shinto became rebranded as Yoshida Shinto, and the Yoshida family, which Kanetomo had founded, would persist in a hereditary high priesthood throughout Sengoku Jidai and all throughout the Edo period. By the time of Oda Nobunaga, Yoshida Shinto was arguably the most prominent form of Shinto practiced and taught nationwide, and its authority rivaled even that of the Grand Ise Shrine. As we discussed previously, Oda Nobunaga seems to have never harbored any desire to be named as shogun. In fact, he went out of his way to refuse any rewards of higher office from the shogun he had just helped restore, partly because it was his intention to forge a new national political status quo. A few years before his assassination, Nobunaga had begun to look to Japan's spiritual frameworks for a source of higher political legitimacy. The construction of Azuch Castle was not only a projection of Nobunaga's authority, but an expression of his spiritual status. The stupa on the ground floor, for example, evoked the Buddha Prabhutaratna, called Nyorai in Japan, who appears in the Lotus Sutra rising from the earth in a massive stupa and goes on to confirm the teachings of Sakyamuni, the historic Buddha. The message was clear. Nobunaga's authority sprung not from the emperor or shogun or any earthly authorities, but were confirmed by the spiritual forces of the universe themselves. In the early 1580s, several foreign missionaries who had attended him recorded in their journals that Nobunaga frequently referred to himself as a god, something which made the monotheistic Roman Catholic visitors worry about continued acceptance of their faith in Japan. Sometimes this spiritual self-aggrandizement is used by fiction writers to explain the actions of Akechi Mitsuhide in betraying Nobunaga, but again, this is far from certain. In any case, Nobunaga's grand objectives were obviously cut short when he was killed. Toyotomi Hideyoshi likewise expressed no interest in the office of shogun. Instead, he tried to revive and reforge the imperial regency in order to cement both his power and that of his descendants. While he respected Nobunaga and went to great lengths to demonstrate said respect through posthumous shrine building and arranging for Nobunaga's grandson to be named his official heir, he also took steps to ensure that the new unified political status quo came under his direct authority. Like Nobunaga, he won glory on the battlefield, first against Shibata Katsuhiye and then against the powers of Shikoku and Kyushu, respectively. Hideyoshi was mindful that his origin as a commoner was something which could potentially prove a political liability, so he recast his life story as a series of divine interventions. Surely, after all, a commoner could not rise so high in Japanese politics without the help of divine patronage. He extended divinity itself to both himself and to other daimyo around the nation, remarking on more than one occasion that the lords of Japan were gods who rightfully received the worship of their people. In his foreign correspondence, he went so far as to name Japan the Land of the Gods, using that title to justify both increasing domestic control and proclaiming Japan's rightful place in the wider East Asian sphere as a dominant power. This reconfiguration of regional geopolitical power was reinforced by the teachings of Yoshida Shinto, which taught that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas written of in sutras from India and China were actually avatars of indigenous Japanese deities. After his death, Toyotomi Hideyoshi was deified and his cult especially patronized by his former loyalists like Kato Kiyomasa, who built shrines to his spirit. He was deified as a daimyojin, a term which means great shining deity, and was a common title to bestow upon higher deities. Although he tolerated the Toyokuni daimyojin cult while Hideyoshi's more influential partisans still lived, Tokugawa Ieyasu would eventually wage a war of extermination against Hideyoshi's cult, which he saw as a threat to his own rising power. Regarding his rise to power, I think at this point in the season we can safely summarize Ieyasu's tactics after Sekigahara as revitalizing the office of shogun, creating an ad hoc surveillance state in which his loyalists could prevent potential enemy cohesion, and ultimately eliminating Hideyoshi's descendants at the Siege of Osaka, all while claiming self-defense. However, his later actions as shogun, an office which had rarely enjoyed real national power, reveal a spiritual dimension which his descendants would perpetuate for as long as they clutched the reins of power. During his waning years, he wrote a specific set of instructions to be carried out as his last wishes. His body was to be initially interred on a mountain in the vicinity of Sunpu Castle in Suruga Province. During the year after his death, a shrine with a grand hall would be built at Nikko, which lies in nearby Shimotsuke Province. After a year had passed, his remains were to be exhumed and placed into their final resting place on the grounds of that shrine. The Nikko Toshogu Shrine still stands in the city of Nikko today, though today it is a sprawling complex which neighbors several temples and fellow Shinto shrines. On its grounds, visitors can see many national treasures of Japan, as well as numerous items like statues and swords dubbed important cultural properties. The shrine itself is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Upon its gate rests a wood carving of a sleeping cat, which is reputed to have been created by friend of the pod, Jingoro Hidari himself. Also, here is as good a place as any to apologize for reversing the order of his name in episode 12. Not sure why I did that, but his family name was Jingoro, so it should come first. In 1617, following the directions of his father's will, Shogun Tokugawa Hidetada oversaw the transfer of his father's remains. Among the religious teachers who composed part of Ieyasu's entourage during his life, there was some dispute about the proper title to bestow upon the deceased shogun. The title of Daimyojin, meaning Great Shining Deity, was championed by some, but this title carried political complications because the cult of Hideyoshi, which Ieyasu had destroyed as subversive, also called the deified Taiko by this title. Ultimately, the title of Daigongen was adopted. Its meaning in English is Great Avatar Who Shines Over the East. Avatar, in this case, essentially means incarnation of Buddha, and the religious and philosophical implications of such a title are just as expansive as Japanese religious practices during the Edo period. Naming Tokugawa Ieyasu as an avatar of the Buddha obviously catered to the Buddhist population, but proclaiming him as shining is a clear reference to Amaterasu, the sun goddess of Shinto, who was considered the patron goddess of the nation. Thus, the title of Daigongen checks all boxes for religious devotees. Certainly this pleased the Bakufu, who wanted to establish the government that Ieyasu had founded as having authority over all Japanese, regardless of which accepted belief system they preferred. To aid the many pilgrimages and occasional visits from the shogun, the footpath that led from Edo to Nikko was made into an official highway and given the name Nikko Kaido. Cedar trees were planted and tended on either side of the road, and today the paved roadway that exists there is called the Cedar Avenue of Nikko. This highway would enjoy a decent amount of foot traffic over the years, as great shogunal processions would march from Edo to Nikko Toshogu and pay their respects to their departed founder. Not to be outdone by his father, Shogun Tokugawa Ieyasu made further improvements to the shrine, adding buildings and expanding the complex's footprint. Herman Ooms notes that the critical difference between the cult of Ieyasu and his predecessors Hideyoshi and Nobunaga is that the late shogun's cult was purely political. The inner sanctum of the Nikko Toshogu was only accessible to daimyo and hatamoto. The gokenin, being lower vassals who did not enjoy the privilege of shogunal audiences, were likewise forbidden from a posthumous audience with the late shogun and not permitted inside the hall where his cremated remains were interred. Around the nation, sister shrines called Toshogu were erected, which likewise celebrated Tokugawa Ieyasu as a deity. However, unlike the primary shrine of Nikko Toshogu, visitors to these other shrines likely venerated Ieyasu as a protector deity, but not as a national light-bringing defender of all Japan. He was merely another god in a land of many gods. Nikko Toshogu did enjoy a modest amount of popularity among regional pilgrims, though, like the Gokenin, the commoners were not allowed inside the great hall where Ieyasu's ashes were interred. Around 30,000 people a year visited Nikko Toshogu, which sounds impressive at first blush, but pales in comparison to the visitors received by the Grand Ise Shrine in southern Kansai, which regularly numbered in the hundreds of thousands annually, and in some years even topped a million. In addition to the renovations and expansions enjoyed by Nikko Toshogu over the years, it also received several donated items, many of which are still seen on its grounds today. Date Masamune gave iron lanterns, the Kingdom of Chosan gave a bronze bell, the calligraphy on the main gate announcing the shrine's name is attributed to Emperor Go Mizunowo, and the Dutch East India Company presented a special rotating metal lantern to Shogun Iemitsu, who passed it along to Nikko Toshogu. Many Tokugawa shoguns would later justify their policies, whatever they happened to be, by making a case that Ieyasu, whom they referred to as Daigongen or sometimes just Gongen, would have approved of those measures. As the Edo period stretched on, shoguns would continually make additions, renovations, or improvement to the shrine and would visit it often, sometimes as frequently as once a year. The Bakufu hoped the shrine would serve as a reminder to the daimyo who joined their pilgrimages, those serving their Sankin Kotai year in Edo, that the Tokugawa shogunate was not merely an absolute surveillance state which governed through fear, but was protected by the kami, the divine spirit of a deified Ieyasu. Whether this spiritual propaganda was effective or not, I am uncertain, but the exclusivity of the inner shrine, which allowed entry only to daimyo and hatamoto, may have made the visitors feel special, which is sometimes more effective than fear. Though it was far from an effective replacement for Japan's traditional belief systems, the cult of Tokugawa Ieyasu would persist until, frankly, the modern age. Although the Yoshida Shinto belief system which undergirded Ieyasu's deification was later dismantled, an event we will discuss in a future season, there are around 30 shrines that still stand nationwide, and are attended to by Shinto priests tasked with performing the seasonal rituals and festivities. Because of its designation as a UNESCO World Heritage Site, Nikko Toshogu probably receives more annual visitors on average now than it ever did during the Edo period. Regardless of the eventual collapse of the shogunate that bears its name, in spite of every attempt to cast him as a villain by later generations, the burial site of Tokugawa Ieyasu remains a popular attraction for both foreign visitors and Japanese residents alike. This episode marks the end of publicly available episodes for Season 11, the Early Edo Period. For Patreon subscribers, there will be an additional 3 bonus episodes over the next 3 weeks. Episodes for Season 12, the Later Edo Period, will begin on April 22nd.
Until then, thank you for listening. If you would like access to exclusive bonus episodes, as well as ad-free versions of the regular episodes, please consider supporting this podcast at patreon.com/ahistoryofjapan.